Thank you. We are going to be in Joshua again here this morning. Just looking at the very next verse, we've made our way through Joshua sometimes half a chapter at a time. And now that we're to the last chapter, I find myself slowing down to a single verse at a time. This verse, I think, has obviously enough to go over and spend just a day on or an hour on. But it really really hinges upon the next verses as well. So while we'll kind of dive into it in greater detail this week, Lord willing, next week we'll probably put it more into the context, into the flow of what follows thereafter. But this verse, I think, deals with our choices. Every one of us have choices. We all woke up this morning with the choice of what we're going to do today, and I'm thankful that you chose to be here. Once you leave here, you'll have the choice of what to do with the rest of your day. And we'll be able to determine that from that point on. Most Sunday mornings, kind of a humorous thing that happens in our home. My wife says, "Well, I suppose it's about time to get up," and so she starts getting out of bed, and I say, "Well, let me know how it goes." You know, let's curl into the blankets, and she'll say, "You're the pastor. You're gonna have to get up." Well, we have choices, and obviously that's in a comical way. But we have choices every day, and the question will be, what is our choice, and what is the basis for that choice? Before we dive into this next verse, let's begin with a word of prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you again for all that you've done for us. Thank you for your word. I pray again that you allow me to decrease so that you alone would increase. I pray that our time together in your word would impact our hearts, impact our lives, that it would impact the direction of our feet as we walk on this journey of life. And I just pray that we would do all things to your honor and to your glory as we close out the service here this morning. And I just pray that you be honored. In Jesus' name, amen. Over the years, I have certainly quoted a lot of men and women, but a lot of men, I would dare say. We probably know that most of the quotes of men probably came from their wives. This one, I have a quote from a wife, Eleanor Roosevelt, who is often quoted, and I think this is a great quote. I don't know the details of her heart, her salvation. I don't know any of that. I'm certain I could find out, probably, through the pages of history. But this, I think this is a great quote, especially as it leads us to this next verse. She said, "Once philosophy, what we believe, what we think, how we compute things, once philosophy is not best expressed in words, it is expressed in the choices one makes. In the long run, we shape our lives and we shape ourselves. The process never ends until we die, and the choices we make are ultimately our responsibility." And what a strong statement there. We can say, "This is what I believe." But ultimately, what we believe is truly evidenced by how we live. Regardless of what we say, it's what we live that proves what our philosophy, what our religion, what our faith truly is all about. On the funny side of things, and it seems like I may have used this illustration before, so if I have, just laugh like you've never heard it before. A British Prime Minister, Herbert Asquith? We'll go with it. He was the prime minister in the early 1900s. He once stayed at the Rothschild estate in Buckinghamshire, England. And while being waited on by the butler at tea time, the questions proceeded like this. The butler asked, "Tea? Coffee?" I'm not going to do this in a British accent, so this is just my Midwestern accent. "But tea, coffee, or a peach from off the wall, sir?" To which the prime minister replied that he would like tea, please. The butler then asked, "China, India, or Ceylon, sir?" To which the prime minister replied that he would like China. The butler then asked, "Lemon, milk, or cream, sir?" To which the prime minister replied that he would like milk. Now, I'm not a barista, but does that make that a chai latte then? I'm just wondering, is that how that works out? A Chinese tea with milk. The butler then asked, "Jersey, Hereford, or Shorthorn, sir?" I'm just going to guess that the questions probably will never end. At some point, I would have to say that the prime minister would just say, "I just want some tea. Just tea. Just give me tea." If it were me, I would say, "Sweet tea." And if the next question was Midwestern or Southern, you would all know Southern is the way to go on that one. Choices, our ability or inability for man to have a choice, has split many churches, split many denominations. In fact, entire denominations have been formed on the basis of our theology of man's choice. And so let me give you some hiccups in the discussion. This is kind of a lengthy introduction, but a lot of doctrine before we get into the simplicity of this verse. Let me make a simple verse more difficult. It's basically what I'm saying here. But as far as salvation, as far as the choices we have, does man have the ability to choose salvation, or does God predestine man to salvation? It's a simple question, but it has divided many by the answer. Do we have the opportunity to choose Christ, or are we just predestined to Christ? Personally, and I know that not everybody throughout Christianity agrees with me, but I believe that part of the problem with the answer of that question is based on the omniscience of God from our vantage point in minds that can't grasp the extent of who God is. I believe that it's not necessarily that we don't have a choice. I believe we have a choice. But I know that God knows what we will choose. And I don't believe that God's knowledge removes the ability of our choice. But we still can choose. But because we have a God that is not only omniscient, meaning he knows all things, but he's also omnipresent, meaning he's in all times and all places, at the same time, our God knows exactly what we're going to choose in the exact moment that we choose it, and the rest of our eternity is laid out in his plan, in his hand, accordingly. Let me give you a case in point, kind of humorously speaking. Say, imagine this afternoon, my wife approaches me to ask what I would like for dinner. She gives me two choices. Now, for those of you that know me, you will see the comedy of these two choices. What if she said this afternoon, your two choices are either peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or Italian beef sandwiches? Now, if you know me, you know, number one, that I love beef. And if you know me, you know, number two, that I do not like. You could almost use the word despise peanut butter. Jelly, not the greatest fondness of jelly, but peanut butter, not at all interested at all. Now, my wife could come to me and say, so, two choices. What would you like, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or a finely seasoned, kind of simmering all day Italian beef that the very scent has filled the entire house? What would you like? Now, my wife obviously knows the answer to that question. There is probably no way that I would choose peanut butter and jelly over Italian beef. But she still gave me the choice. Did her knowledge of my answer change the ability that I have to say, oh boy, I really do choose Italian beef? I still have the choice. I could still surprise her and say peanut butter and jelly. I'd be more surprised when she served me peanut butter and jelly. But I would still have that choice. Now let's take this another step further, because now we're really going to get into, I'm going to try to illustrate an even greater discussion in man's choice as far as theology goes without trying to get too deep here. Let's say for a moment that my wife knows that we had a power outage several days ago. This isn't necessarily the case, but say we had a power outage several days ago and that beef in question began to thaw and warm in the refrigerator for longer than it was supposed to. And theoretically, she should have made that Italian beef that day. But it has set. So there is the probability that if I choose Italian beef, it's probably going to make me sick. But yet she still gives me that choice. Would you like peanut butter and jelly, which also might probably make me sick, but for a different reason? Or would you like Italian beef, which has the likelihood that it will also make you sick? Do I still have a choice? And does my wife not know if you choose that? No guarantee how this is going to work in your gut when you get that thing starting to digest. There's no guarantee what's going to happen next. I saw the choice even if my choice is for my bad, if you could say it that way. I think a lot of times we think, well, if God didn't want me to do it, he wouldn't have given me the Choice. Well, I think that we still have that choice. Nothing is still beyond the omniscience and the omnipotence, the all-powerfulness of our God in our choices. But I do believe that our God gives us choices that we can follow if we desire that really aren't for our good. Now, my wife sat me down and said, all right, we've got two choices for dinner. You have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, which I know you don't care for, but she gives me, lays it all out. Otherwise, I can make some Italian beef. But the beef part of the Italian beef sandwich is in question. And we probably should just throw it away, but if I make it for you, it's possible that you will become very ill. Now, my next question could probably be, knowing that my only other choice is peanut butter and jelly, is how sick will I be? You know, if it's not a lot of sickness, then, you know, surely I'd still get to lean that direction. So how sick will this make me? And now my choice begins to become more of a more complex question. I got to lay out some pros and cons here and consider some consequences and what is my tomorrow and my next day going to work out for me if I eat this as opposed to this. My choice is still there, correct? Now, I can tell you this, before you question my wife's cooking ability and mental status, my wife would never give me those two choices. If the beef was bad, it's thrown away. And truthfully, if the beef is bad, I would dare say she still wouldn't give me the choice of peanut butter because she knows I don't like it. I guess you could say it this way. Our God gives us more choice than my wife will, is how that will work out. But our choices also fall within the realm of our nature. You know what I'm trying to say? Let's just say I took an elevator up to the 50th floor, obviously not in Stark County, but if I went elsewhere and there was a building that was 50 floors up, I took the elevator up to the 50th floor, opened up the window and said American Airlines, I'm going to fly like an eagle. Well, I am a man. I am not an eagle. And I also know that there's this thing called terminal velocity, and before long I will have reached it. And shortly thereafter I will have reached an abrupt stop at the bottom, at the ground. 50 floors below. My choice still falls within the parameters of my nature. So now let me get to an even deeper theological point here. What is our nature? Romans 3:23 says, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, which means my nature is being short of the glory of God because I am a sinner. Therefore, I do not have the means, the ability, the power to make a choice that gets me into the right, what am I trying to say here? The right graces of my God, do I? Given a choice, A or B, because of my nature, I am a man and not an eagle. I can't fly from the 50th floor. I will fall to the ground. Unless I had some other mechanical device, a parachute. Unless I had a mechanical device of some sort of, you know, the suits that are flying suits. Unless I had something else that would be added to me, my nature is humanity, which means I walk, I don't fly. So while I have the desire to fly like an eagle, I fall like a man. I might have the desire to glorify my God, but my nature is sinful and I fall short. A or B, I fall short. My desires, my zeal, my greatest efforts, according to Romans 3:23, still says, I fall short. The Romans 5:8 gives us the answer, gives us the hope. But God commendeth his love towards us, in that while we were yet still sinners, while we were still with the nature of humanity, the nature of sinfulness, the nature of, even though I have two choices, I am still going, regardless of what I choose, I'm going to fall short of my God. God loved me so much that he sent his son to die for me so that I would have the means to glorify him. So that Paul would be able to say then whether you eat or drink or whatsoever you do, do all to the glory of God. Without Christ, I don't have the means to do that. With him, I have every means to do that. So my choices then are still contingent upon my nature. Without Christ, my nature is still 100% sinful human man. And I can't jump out of 54 and fly like an eagle, and I can't, despite my best efforts, bring glory and honor to my God as a sinful human. But with Christ within me, I have the means to truly bring honor and glory to God, and I'm commanded to do so. And therefore, my choices then take on a different light. I now have the choice of A or B. Which one do I choose that brings honor and glory to God? Because that's what I'm commanded to do. I have the means to do it. I'm commanded to do it. So my choices ought to follow suit. And this next verse, Joshua 24, verse 15, that's a familiar verse, which is why I was able to take an extended time of introducing the topic of choice. But in this familiar verse, it reminds us of the reality of choice. Here's what Joshua says in 24, verse 15. And if it seem evil among you to serve the Lord, choose ye this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side, on the other side of the flood or the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I know that Caitlin's back this weekend, and so the ongoing joke is whenever my daughter Kate's here in the service, I have more points. She's actually not in the service today. She's downstairs, but I still have 4 points today. Our first point as far as our choice for our God or our choice away from God is that it is a very personal choice. Our choice is personal. It says here, and if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day. This choice is a very personal. Verse 14, going back a few verses, now therefore fear the Lord and serve him. Remember the all bad. Serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your father served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. Seems evil unto you. Choose you this day. This is a choice that I can't make for you. This is a choice that your parents can't make for you. This is a choice that your children can't make for you. This is a choice that is contingent upon you and A or B. What am I going to choose? The first 13 verses of Joshua chapter 24 is a reminder of their history. I won't take the time to review it, but if you on your own, read verses 1 through 13 of this very chapter. God, through Joshua's mouth, has already said, here's what I've done. Verse 1, here's what I did. Verse 2, here's what I did. Here's verse 3, here's what I did. Here's what I did. Here's what I did. Here's who I am. Here's what I continue to do. And then we have the verse from last week then. Now therefore, because of what he has done and because of who he is, fear the Lord and serve him. Verse 15 follows it up. And if you don't see the reason to serve him, choose whom you will serve. It is a personal choice. If your conclusion is, I can't serve my God, I can't serve the one true God, then you have to serve, you have to choose who you are going to serve. The choice is yours. Now, if we could illustrate this with a car salesman pitch, and I've never been a car salesman, but in Consumer Reports for this year, they say the most reliable vehicle made this year is a Lexus. And I think that Lexus has actually held that spot for several years, at least that's what they say anyway. And the least reliable, according to Consumer Reports, is Ford and GM. And literally what they said was anything made in Detroit. I don't know what they have against Detroit, but that was what they said. Consumer Reports says here, Lexus is number one. If you want to look at the least reliable, look at Detroit. Whatever they make, that's at the bottom of the list. J.D. Power places Lexus also as number one. Ironically, they place the Chevy at number 5, the Dodge at 9, and GMC at 12, and so on. The list goes. Interestingly enough, they place the Polestar 2. And yeah, has anybody ever heard of or seen a Polestar? I've never even seen it. I had to look it up. What is a Polestar 2? Never even heard of such a thing. J.D. Power says it's the least reliable car you can buy this year. But it's an electrical vehicle that really did not measure up. And it's not just that J.D. Power does not like electrical vehicles because they had some pretty high-ranking electrical vehicles in their list. But at the bottom of their list was this Polestar. Never heard of it. I know nothing about it. But for the sake of illustrating the first 13 verses, you all go to the car lot this afternoon, and you narrow it down. You've got this Lexus on one side, and you've got a Polestar 2 on the other. You go into the sales office, and you're like, all right, I've narrowed my choice down to the Lexus or the Polestar. Can you help me make a decision? Now, clearly, if the guy knows anything about J.D. Power, he's going to say, well, let me tell you what they say. They say for the ratings of safety, Lexus is number one. For the ratings of reliability, Lexus is number one. For the of safe, you know, he'll break it down. For this, it's Lexus. For this, Lexus. For this, Lexus. So here's five areas to consider in buying a car. Lexus, 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 Lexus. All right, so what about the Polestar? Well, let's look at those same five areas. All right, for this one, the last in the list, Polestar 2. For this area that you're Polestar 2, it's that same thing. Polestar 2, that too. And, oh boy, it's Polestar 2 is the worst. So as you sit there contemplating your choice, can you imagine making the choice of, you know what, you've sold me on it. I'm going to buy the Polestar. I would dare say that the salesman scratching his head saying, don't blame me for this one. I didn't sell you this. I said the best was, the worst was, and so you as a salesman say, well, I guess you're the buyer. So the salesman says to you, I think before you make your choice, let's take it for a test drive. So you get into the Lexus, you notice a smooth ride, and you notice all the, it's like you're driving an airplane in there, all the gadgets and all the controls, and you know, you speak and the thing just responds to you, and you're just in awe of this Lexus, and its reliability as far as when you step on the brake, it slows down. When you step on the gas, it takes off, and you get back, and you're like, that was a nice car. And you get into the Polestar. Now, I know nothing about them, so I'm not relying on anything that I know about the Polestar, but you get into the Polestar, and you start it up, and it takes a little extra time to get it started. Boom! Like, oh, I thought it wasn't going to start there for a second, but we got it going. All right. You put it in drive. You put it in D, and it starts backing up. And the salesman sitting next to you is like, oh, no, that's all right. You just kind of jiggle the shift knob right there. Just jiggle. Oh, there you go. Now you start going to go forward. And this is a brand new car. You look at the odometer, and it's got like 5 miles on it. And so now you're driving down the road, and the thing keeps pulling to the left. And the salesman's like, yeah, that's how these things go. And I don't know Polestar, so I'm not picking on them. I'm just, for the sake of illustration, I think he's pulling to the left. And the salesman just says, yeah, you just kind of keep a firm grip. You know, you're supposed to keep two hands on the wheel anyway, so this just kind of helps you out. So you come up to the first stoplight. Again, you're not in Stark County because we don't have those, but you come to a stoplight, and you step on the brakes, and the thing kind of gallops like a horse, and it slowly slows down in that kind of a fashion, and it kind of frightens you, and you look at the salesman, and you're like, what is happening? And he's like, oh, that's normal. That's how they stop. So and as you wait and the thing's kind of sputtering and kicking and you're really not sure the thing's gonna stay alive while you're at the red light. Light turns green and you step on the accelerator, and it stalls. You start to back up, you get it going again, and you make your way back. And just a block before the yard, the lot, you notice that there's just a whole lot of smoke coming out from the back end of this car. And you pull into the lot, and the salesman's pretty convinced. He's now convinced you that you don't want the Polestar. You really want to buy the other option, the option A, Lexus. So he brings you back into his office, sits you down, and he's got the Lexus keys in his hands because this is a pretty clear choice, and he's got the paperwork for the Lexus. And he's like, all right, so after that, now what's your choice? And you respond like, well, that was actually pretty enlightening. I really didn't understand how different the two cars are. So yeah, I think you really have cemented in my mind, I'd like to go with the Polestar. We know that the truth is everything leading up to that point, let me say it this way, nothing leading up to that choice has led you to a correct, like you maybe should go visit a neurological surgeon, because everything to that point has led you to the reality that you don't want to buy Polestar 2, whatever that is. But what you do want to buy is the Lexus, because that's number one, and you drove it, and it proved itself. The Polestar 2 was the very bottom of the list, and it as well proved itself. It proved that there's a reason it's at the bottom of the list. Now, again, I don't know anything about really either of those cars. If you ask me about a 2007 Buick, whatever we have out there, I could tell you about it. Apparently not the name, but I could tell you it's a Buick. I could tell you about the vehicle that we're driving, but I don't know anything about these two. But everything up to that point says, don't buy this, buy this instead. The first 13 verses of this chapter have shown the excellency of our God. And Joshua brings them to verse 15. He says, but now you have a choice. I have proven to you the Lexus is an amazing vehicle. And the Polestar 2, nobody's even heard of. Nobody buys. But you have the choice. And it's your choice. Are we going to choose God or not? Are we going to think that this is somehow determined for me by somebody else? We're going to determine that this is my dad's decision, my mom's decision. I choose this because it was my mom's thing, which is not a bad reasoning. That's a great foundation that we have, but the choice is still ours. Do we make the choice for our God after reading 13 verses of all that our God is and all that our God has done? We've looked at the superiority of God. But we still have to choose him. We can't just know Lexus is good. What did I say? I forgot now what the other car is. Polestar. Yeah, thank you. Polestar 2 is very bad. Lexus, very good. Polestar 2, very bad. But we still have the knowledge of the two should drive our decision. But just knowing one is good, one is bad is not enough. We have to decide. We have to sit down in the salesman's office and we have to make the decision. This is what I'm going to buy. It is your choice. Knowledge set aside, I have to choose. There are a lot of people today that will say, oh yes, God is a very good God. God is a very loving God. They know the statistics. They know the stats. They know the history. They know the background. They know who God is, but they have never said, I choose God. They could quote the J.D. Power statistics, so to speak. But when they get into the office to make the decision to pick the keys that they want to drive away with, they sit there, to use a latter word, dumbfounded of what they're supposed to do. The choice is personal. But not only is it a personal choice, but it is an urgent choice. Notice it says, it seems evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you, the next two words, this day. Joshua isn't putting it up. You know, sometime in your life, you're going to have to make the decision. Joshua isn't pointing out, all right, dads and moms and kids, you know, before you reach my age, Joshua says this as the senior of them all at that point, because all of those, his generation, died off in the wilderness. So he's the senior at this time. And so he says, when by the time you reach my age, you're going to have made this choice. No, he says, choose you today. Now, this isn't a choice that you can put off. You know, there are a lot of choices that you can put off for some time. There are a lot of choices in life that you can make today or tomorrow, next week, next month, next year. You know, you might have some consequences on the timing of when you make that. Certainly, if you're going to do the stock market, the timing is everything. But there's not that urgency. Here there is a great urgency. It says, choose you today. As I've gathered you here in my final days of life here on this earth, I'm calling you today, right now, what is your choice? Who are you choosing? And I don't think it's because Joshua had some sort of he wasn't all about he wasn't a numbers guy. I don't think he wanted to be able to say to take to his grave, you know what, I I had a 98% success rate. The 98% of them, I don't think Josh was concerned about the numbers. He's concerned about the individual hearts. And he says, today you need to choose. Today, given what God has done for you, today is the day of choice. Today is the day that we have to decide, do I choose God or do I not? Am I choosing to serve him or am I choosing to serve something else? But today, the choice is urgent. And that choice has a great consequence. You know, I think it goes even beyond the reality of our life is but a vapor. And we don't know when our last day will be. And so there's the urgency of that point. So I believe that there's a lot of opportunities we miss if we set off this choice today. How different our tomorrow will be contingent upon our choice of today. Our choice of God today. Case in point, in May I finished my second grad degree, and my intention, my dream has always been to go to the doctorate level. Not because I have any desire that anybody call me Dr. Newthorn or Dr. Art. I love schooling. I love education. I love being challenged in that way. And I'm intrigued by that. Reaching the point of education at that point. But I also know that as I'm, you know, the next step, I've got step one and step two done. Now I got to enroll for step three and start working. I know the time involved and I know the cost involved and I know this is going to be a lot harder than grad level classes and it's going to take a lot more time than grad level classes. But I also know the moment I start, a time clock starts. I think I have 5 years. From the moment I say, all right, I'm going to do this, I have 5 years to get it done. And so it's basically, once I make the decision, it's a hit the ground running. And so I've got to kind of play this out. When will be, if ever, a good time that I have enough energy, enough time, enough money to say, all right, start the clock now. I'm going to start running. Frankly, I haven't made that choice yet. Still have the dream. Still have the desire. But it's a challenge. It's expensive, and it's going to take a lot of time. One of my other dreams has always been I would love to write a book. I like writing, and that's one of my life dreams as well, is to write a book. Now, by doing a doctorate, I accomplish both because they force you to write a book. That's part of the process of the 5 years. And so I have two check marks by this. But I have to do it within their time constraints. And the moment I say, let's go, 5 years. So that choice I'm kind of putting off. Now, it could be that in 5 years I'm going to be saying, you know, had I done that in 2023, I'd be done by now. And I wouldn't still be sitting here thinking, do I want to start it now? Because now I'm going to be hitting, you know, another decade by the time I'm done with this degree. So I know there's consequences of this. I know as well that my wife is also working on grad classes, and she's already enrolled, and she's going to be starting her next class here in a short amount of time, and she's all excited about it, and she's looking up her online and who's in the class with her and the requirements for the class, and she's getting all excited and ready for this. And for the first time in a very long time, I've got no class schedule. Part of me likes that. Part of me thinks this is kind of sad. I don't have that extra challenge, that extra commitment. This is kind of a sad fall semester here. No, I could put this decision off indefinitely. I could be buried in a cemetery and still never have made that decision. And my tombstone then won't, which I hope even if I get the degree, that my tombstone does not say, here lies Dr. Art Newthorn, because that's not what I'm going for. But my obituary will not say, he went to school and he got his doctorate and whatever. And what did it cost me? Well, it actually saved me. If I don't do it, it actually saved me money. It saved me time. I didn't reach some dreams and goals, but it would be some savings. Have you considered the consequence of not choosing God? A choice that you can't put off. Choose you this day. Today. It's personal. It's urgent. It's a decision that you can't just put off and say, all right, well, I've got to figure this out. Well, you know what? Another year's gone by, and I don't know. And another year goes by, and I don't know. So another year goes by, and there's a greater consequence when there's a tombstone in the cemetery with our name on it of what decision we made there versus whether or not I decide to go to the next level of education. There's a much greater consequence for all of eternity. What did I choose? Choose today. It's personal. It's urgent. But I think this is an interesting point. It's also a choice of service. Kind of goes back to the previous verse. Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord. And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve. Again, still the same Hebrew word, abad. So you looked at last week. The choice is a choice of service. In other words, Joshua isn't saying to them, which I think is very significant. He's not saying to them, choose you this day which God, capital G or little g, is best for you. I think the first 13 verses of this chapter has already proven the Lexus is a lot better than the, and again, I forgot it. That little version 2 of the electric vehicle. The Lexus is definitely far better than. I would hope that the first 13 verses prove to the children of Israel there is no one that compares to God. The choice given here in this verse is not, which God do you think is better? The choice in this verse is not, Joshua hasn't called them all together and said, all right, so here's what God has done, here's what the other gods have not done. So which one do you think is the better God? His call to them is a choice of which one will you serve? You know, that's as I thought about that, and I dwelt on that very word here that's repeated multiple times in verses 14 and 15, why would we serve something let me say it this way. Why would we choose to serve a God that we know is inferior to the one true God? My mind, in human capacity form, says, here's what the God of the universe, here's what the creator of the world is able to do, and we have proven what the gods, little g, of the Canaanites and the gods which our fathers served on the other side of the river. Here's what they could not do. They couldn't compete with the God, the Almighty God, Jehovah. So we have that understanding. We know that there is only one true God. If you doubt that, go back to Deuteronomy. Go back to the first 23 chapters of Joshua. It's made it very clear that there is only one God. So he's not calling them to consider, to make a choice. Which one do you think is better? He's calling them to make a choice. Which one will you serve? Because we often do choose to serve that which is not better, right? There are decisions in our life where we have chosen to serve someone, something, that we know is not the better option. We have chosen, perhaps at times, we have chosen jobs that we know this isn't my dream, this wasn't my goal. It was available, and I think after I finished college and we were engaged and getting to be married, and I'm getting out of school, and so I've gone from a full time student to now a guy who's about ready to get married, and I applied at jobs all over the place, and it's rough when you have on your resume, I have a degree in Bible, and you go to Lowe's. We're like, I don't know that we have an aisle for Bibles. And so I was really having a hard time finding a job, and I thought, you know, here, and in my estimation, I just need a job. I just need something that pays. I was working during school. I worked full-time during school. It was a security job, that worked really well in my schooling, but it didn't pay that much. And certainly not enough for marriage. Certainly not enough. I mean, it paid enough to help me get through school, but not enough to help me and a wife get through life. And so I still had that job. They wanted me to keep the job, and I was still working that job, but I'm looking for something, as we'll say, better, something that would be during the days instead of all night, something that would be paying a little better. So I'm going around, and I started with some bigger factories, and I'm not getting anywhere. So I go to, you know, like the Lowe's and the Home Depot's and things that I think, well, this could be a cool job. Not my dream job by any means, but I could work this out. And I'm getting no and no. Finally, I just asked somebody, I said, is there a reason? And the response was, we just don't think your schooling is going to make you stay here very long. I'm like, well, that's valid, I guess, because I did go to school to be a pastor, not to work in the plumbing aisle of Lowe's, so I guess that's a valid statement. So right down the road from where I was staying in a home with a family from our church at that time, close to school, was a Subway, and they had a help wanted, and I thought, well, that's something. So I went in there, and I filled out the application, and for the first time after, I bet 55 applications I filled out, they had me with their uniform back then was that black bib thing. I went back home with a black bib with hours for the very next day. And I remember thinking to myself, not cool art. Sandwich artist. You know, at least when I can say I'm a security guard, there's at least some. But I'm a sandwich artist at Subway. So kind of, I get walked back into the house, and my parents were in Chicago, so this is in Wisconsin, and I'm staying with a family in a church that we were attending that we would be getting married in, and I walk back in, and the lady was kind of like a grandma to me. She says to me, so how'd it go? Did you find a job? Yes, I did. Where are you going to work? Where are you working? And she's all excited.
Subway.
What? Where?
Subway.
Hey, did you just say Subway? Yeah. You know, there are times that we choose to serve, and in the ideal of the moment, boy, I need a job today, and I have a job. I have a job tomorrow. I literally have the fancy little black outfit thing and the green shirt that I have to wear, and I'm ready to go. And it's not the dream job of mine. I never as a child thought someday I hope to be a Subway sandwich artist. Never had that dream. But here I am. I am now a Subway sandwich artist. And that worked well. We actually, guess what we served for our rehearsal meal? Right before we got married, we had a couple of six foot long sandwiches from Subway and cookies, those frozen cookie balls, as many as I wanted. By that time, I was now the store manager. 2 months later, I'm now the store manager of the place. That's how desperate they were. 2 months later, I'm now the Subway manager, and the owner of the place says, you know, for your wedding, here's what we're going to do. As many cookies as you want and can need, they're yours. Well, I mean, you don't tell a 21-year-old, you don't tell a 21-year-old you can have as many cookies as you want. That's, suddenly that job just became, this is my dream job. we've gone from here to here. Now, the very next day, I realized the cookies were gone, and I had to go back to work at Subway and fell back into its proper place. But you know, there are certain times where we choose to serve that which we know is not the superior, that which we know is not the best. We kind of excuse it as, this is going to have to work right now, but we know it's not what is truly what our desire is. And so we make decisions accordingly, but our choice is a choice of service. I know that God is the only God. I know that God is the creator of the universe. I know that my God is omniscient. He knows all things. I know that He is omnipresent. He is all places at all times. I know that He's all merciful. I know that He's all loving. I know that He's all powerful. I know all that our God is, and that there is no other God like Him. There is no other God but Him. He is the only one true God. But Joshua says, so who are you going to serve? That's the choice of the day. It should be obvious there's only one God. That's not the choice here. Which God is the best God? Let's rank them like I did with the cars. No, we know who the best God is. The question here for this day, in this moment, that you have to decide is, which God are you going to serve? When it becomes a little difficult and you're married and you're not having children and you know that your fathers had a little monument here that was the God of fertility. And, you know, throughout history, it seems maybe have to done something. We're not sure. We don't have statistics to prove so, but it seemed to be something that they relied on. Which God are you going to serve? When it's a year of a drought and the crops aren't coming up like they're supposed to, and it's your livelihood is in that field, and you're not sure what's going to happen. Well, you know what? My great-great-grandfather had this little monument that was the God of rain or the God of harvest. And we don't have statistics to prove that thing did anything, but it's what they relied on. Which God are you going to rely on? Which God are you going to serve? Choose today which God you're going to serve. Where's our choice of service? But last thing, I need to go quickly here. The choice is also an honorable choice. I suppose we could say it's a household choice if we will look at the verses literally. It says, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Now, I don't believe that Joshua is taking the authority to take away the choice of his children. I don't think that Joshua is saying, my kids and my grandkids and the servants in my household, they do not have a choice. This is a choice for you all, but for my household, my servants, my maidservants, my children and my grandchildren and my nieces and my nephews and my brothers, my siblings and my sisters, they don't have a choice. The choice isn't given to them. I'm making that choice for them. But for the rest of you, I don't believe that what Joshua is saying is they have no choice. But I believe what Joshua is saying is simply this. He has made the choice, and he is so confident in the living of that choice. Remember the quote from Eleanor Roosevelt? He is going to live out the reality of his choice that is going to make it very difficult for his servants and his maidservants and his children and his grandchildren and his nieces and his nephews and all of his siblings to choose anything else to serve but the one true God. It would be like being the salesman trying to prove the difference between those two vehicles. It kind of proved themselves. Joshua says, I'm going to, in my household, that choice is so concrete in my mind. I'm not wavering on this. I know who I'm going to serve. And for all these behind me, my family, my extended, their household was not just their kids. Their households in that day, well, that was a term that meant their family, their family reunion time. We will serve the Lord. And I'm not taking away their choice, but I'm going to make it so clear to them that there really is only one choice. It's to serve God. Do we live that kind of reality? Do our feet, the rubber of our shoes hit the road with such soundness that our kids say, I still have a choice, but why would I choose anything else? I could choose this, I could choose that, but I have watched Dad live and I know there's no reason, there's no valid other option besides serving my God. Do we have that kind of choice? We have that kind of confidence? We have that kind of boldness? Do we live out our service to such a point that our family members say, there really isn't a choice here. I still have the choice, but go back to my opening illustration, one of my opening illustrations. It's like for me choosing between Italian beef and peanut butter and jelly. I have the choice if my wife gave me that choice. Funny, not funny. But there's only one that I'm going to choose. There's only one option I will pick out of those two choices. My family knows it. My kids know that. Only Caitlin is brave enough to eat a cookie in the, or a peanut butter cookie in the backseat of my car. All the rest of them are like, I gotta quick eat this before I get in the car. Because they know Dad does not like peanut butter. Just the smell of it does not know. Ugh. But I have a choice. And it's clear to my kids, that choice. But what's even more important about my choice of peanut butter or not is my service to my God. Or not. What's your choice? How are you living that out? Now, if we could... Honorable was a hard one. It could have been household. I wanted to avoid the word household because I don't want it to think that Dad chooses my faith. Grandpa chooses my faith. That's a choice I have to make. That's the first point. But there's a reason for this. If we look at our choices, it's personal, it's urgent, it's about service, and it's an honorable choice. P-U-S-H, push. We have got to push. That shows the urgency of it. We have to push. That shows the service aspect of it. We have to push. That shows the personal aspect of it. And we have to push. We have to work at it. We have to move forward with it. It's not going to be easy, but imagine trying to push something that is, it's not easy to push. Imagine that as we consider walking this out before our family. I have a car in the garage that's a 1993 Honda Del Sol. The thing probably, when after it rains, weighs maybe, what, 32 pounds, I guess. It's amazing that I can get into it, but I fit actually kind of well in it. Getting in and out of it is not so well, but fitting in it actually is pretty well. It's like that far off the ground. And it goes like this far above me or in front of me and about that far behind me, and I feel like I'm on a little bicycle with extra tin around me or plastic, fiberglass. I literally, when it's in the garage, I can put it in neutral, it's manual transmission, I put my one foot out and I can just like Fred Flintstone it and I can move the car. As long as it's flat level, with one foot I can move the car backwards and forwards. If you parked in this parking lot, you know that right behind, probably about to the cross, unless it's got moved. Is it still here? Is a 1995 Dodge Ram 1500 that my oldest, who's now a Marine, bought. From my brother, and it was his pride and joy for quite a few years, and then he joined the Marine Corps and says, I don't want the truck anymore, you guys do with what you want. And so, there it is, it sits there. To the best of my ability, although I probably could about put my feet through the floor and try to do Fred Flintstone, I can't move that truck. We've had to push it for different times, and it takes the whole family behind that thing just to get that thing to roll. You know, when we live out our choice, it's not a simple choice of moving a little car. It's a push. It's an effort. It's a choice that requires commitment. It's a choice that demands my all. Have we made that choice? Let's pray. Lord, we thank you again for your word. We thank you for the opportunity that Children of Israel had in their choice, but I pray that we'd be able to understand the importance of it for us today as well. That we would push in that decision. That we make it clear to our children, to our grandchildren, to our nieces, to our nephews, to our siblings, that the great blessing of serving the one true God. To the point even that our children will be able to say, well, they still have their choice. Their choice will be made so much easier on their part because they see it lived out in our lives. And I pray that you'd enable us to have that kind of life, that kind of reality to the choice that we make to serve you. We might truly bring honor and glory to you, that while we were yet still sinners, incapable of bringing you glory, because of Christ we now can. I pray that we live that out in our lives. I pray that you'd be with our time together as well. If for those that are able to stay this afternoon, that the time of fellowship will be honor and glory to you as well. We ask all these things in your name. Amen. We're going to close, I think, with hymn number 57. Cleanse me, just one verse. Let's stand as we sing hymn number 57.